Because that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, April 10th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, Calipari admits a mistake, one that we already knew about. Somebody break up the Reds. They're winning the National League Central. Sergio Garcia exercises some demons, but we still have one big question regarding the Masters. All right, Russell Westbrook's the MVP. What do you want, a cookie? Ric Flair news? As if there's ever a day without Ric Flair news. When is arm wrestling illegal? And we'll find a baseball game to pick tonight by process of elimination. So let's go.
You are listening live.
The months of April to August in the city of Lexington are horrible for sports talk radio, but in my opinion, if you can carry a half-hour podcast 4 days a week in a town with no professional sports teams to speak of, that determines whether you can be a sports talk radio host or not. So, our shows don't change, but if you're looking for local news, there's not a whole lot of local news around here because, let's just be honest, we're not going to talk about soccer and track and softball. We're not going to talk about that stuff. We talk about men's basketball, we talk about football, and we talk about anything transcendent when it comes to local sports. Otherwise, we're not talking about you. And that means you, baseball, women's basketball, and the like. As most of you know, four Kentucky basketball players turned pro last week, and the entire city of Lexington is apparently abuzz for the new Calipari 30 for 30 that's coming out on ESPN this Thursday night. But to the bigwigs, apparently you could go downtown Lexington and watch it tonight. We at the Bottom Line are obviously not a bigwig. But I found it interesting, A, the timing of this documentary. It's not during the March Madness NCAA tournament, the only month of the year where most of society pays attention to college basketball. It's done in the middle of April when it's recruiting season. Oh, it's amazing how the timing of that just worked out perfectly for Cal to get a couple of more recruits, especially now that he just lost four players last week. But Calipari apparently found some time over the weekend to go attend a Sacramento Kings Los Angeles Lakers game, a game in which Scalabissiere was playing for the Sacramento Kings. You might be asking yourself, what is Scal up to these days? Well, he's played 31 games for Sacramento. He's now averaging 17.8 minutes a game, and he's averaging 8.7 points and 4.9 rebounds a game. Huh, that's pretty good for a guy we didn't think would even make the NBA, right? Let's look at his stats from last year at Kentucky. He's averaging more points and more rebounds a game in the NBA than he did at Kentucky. How can that be? And in fact, on the TV telecast of whoever was doing the game, they saw Calipari and they interviewed him during the game, in which Calipari admitted that he didn't use Scal the way he should have been used all year. Oh, you don't say. Scal was 6th on the UK team last year in player efficiency rating. He was 7th in minutes played. He was 7th in plus-minus rating. This was not an NBA-caliber player last year. And now, he's averaging almost 9-5 for Sacramento this year. Now, let's just be honest. Sacramento isn't exactly the 96 Bulls. But still, he's showing that he could actually play in the NBA. Something that me and a lot of these quote-unquote draft experts didn't think was even possible a year ago at this time. In fact, Calipari had to hustle to get Scal drafted in the first round at the very end. So it brings up the question we hear year after year regarding Calipari. He recruits the best players in high school. He recruits the very best of the best to come to Kentucky to play basketball. But how much do these players actually, quote-unquote, develop under his coaching? You can argue all you want. Scalabissiere was a complete and total flop last year. And now, he looks like a solid NBA basketball player. Something he did not look like 12 months ago. Just saying. I wonder if that 30 for 30 will talk about that little aspect of Cal's one-and-done coaching career. Something tells me Scal won't be mentioned one time.
Stop. Hammer time.
More local news. College football. Yes, college football. There was a football scrimmage for spring practice over the weekend. And, of course, you probably heard the assistant coaches, depending on which one you talk to, one of them was very happy, one of them was very upset. Wow, what a shocker. Assistant coaches feigning anger after a practice in the springtime. Color me shocked. Lather, rinse, repeat. You hear the same mumbo jumbo every year at every school. Every school does this. But yet, somehow, some way, people treat it like it's gospel. Don't worry. After the spring game next week, you'll hear those coaches who were mad sound a lot happier, and those coaches who were happy will not sound so happy. Just saying. And by the way, I know college football, the SEC, is a big deal. I mean, good Lord, Alabama gets 90,000 to their spring game. A few years ago, Paul Feinbaum was a coach of one of the teams in the spring game. But let me just ask you this. Do you think that the good old wise guys out in Las Vegas, you think they pay attention to any of this mumbo jumbo from any Power 5 conference football team? No. You know what they're looking at right now? Schedules and quarterbacks and coaches. That's all they're caring about right now. Oh, and by the way, you heard it here on April 10th, Oklahoma, Ohio State, locks for the college football playoff. At Kentucky, you're looking at another season in which 6 wins is going to be pushing your luck right at the end. But you know what I want to hear about? This manufactured quarterback controversy. Steven Johnson, your quarterback. Don't give me this Drew Barker stuff. All I've read this preseason, how great Drew Barker looks. Wait a minute, the media can't watch practice. How are we getting all this information about Drew Barker? Conspiracy? Manufactured quarterback controversy? Just saying.
Now, let's analyze what's been working for us. Not a damn thing's been working for us. Like, this damn suit doesn't work for me. And this stinking tie, this damn shirt, it doesn't work for me!
One more college basketball note before we get off the college sports subjects here. Wichita State is leaving the once mighty Missouri Valley Conference. Now they're going to play the AAC Conference, where they can establish rivalries with such longtime geographical rivals like Central Florida, Tulane, and East Carolina. Way to go, Wichita. By the way, their coach, Greg Marshall. Good news and bad news for him. Good news, he's going to get some more publicity next year because he's going to be actually coaching against SMU, UConn, and Cincinnati. Good for him. Bad news, he got taken for a lot of money in a Ponzi scheme, along with Billy Packer, the old college basketball announcer. Talk about a man who's bitter to the end. Billy Packer. You don't think he's raising absolute hell about getting taken in a Ponzi scheme with Greg Marshall? Yeah. He is somewhere bitter as hell.
Hey, Billy Packer, you might be right. We might not be very good and know all the players and all the teams on college basketball. I don't know any players on Wofford or UNC. Actually, you are absolutely right. But stop being a jackass. So sit back, enjoy the March Madness with Greg Gumbel, Clark Kellogg, Jim Nance, and all of us. And shut the hell up.
Ah, the Masters. A tradition unlike any other. Hello, friends. Jim Nance, one of the biggest jerkwads in sports. If there was ever a guy who fits in with the Masters well as a commentator, it's Jim Nance, because he's that smarmy and above you. Well, at least he thinks he is. Sergio Garcia, 37 years old, in his 74th major tournament, won the Masters. Although, did he really win the Masters? Because there's this mysterious video of him dropping a ball, and then the ball moved, and it's like a two-stroke violation. And of course, Jim Nance comes on and says, oh, the officials at the Masters have inspected the video, and there is no punishment. I'm Jim Nance. Thank you, friends. Yeah, if that was that poor girl from last week who got a 4-shot penalty for putting her ball on the wrong side of her quarter when she marked it, if that's a penalty, then Sergio deserved 2 shots for this too. So this Masters will always have an asterisk in my book. Of course, there are now videos leaking out of Sergio's clinching putt on the playoff hole. But of course, the Masters has a very strict rule, no cell phones, period. That means no videos. They're literally looking for these people who took these videos and posted them on the internet. They're looking for these people. But of course, they're not fans of the Masters. They're patrons. Let me tell you something about Augusta and the Masters. As somebody who's been there, and somebody who lived in Atlanta for over 20 years. Believe me when I tell you, Augusta is a one-week-a-year town. Otherwise, it's tumbleweeds and waffle houses, and that's pretty much it. But the holier-than-thou attitude that that city, well, I shouldn't say that city, that the people at the Masters and that golf course that they have is unbelievable. It's like going back in time to a time that none of us who are listening to this can remember. All the concessions, you know, you had to pay $8, $9 for a beer at a baseball game. There, a couple dollars, $3. They sell sandwiches for $1, bottles of water for $1. Everything's cheap. You don't pay for parking. It's like going back in time. I went one time. I think it was 2002 or 2003. The year Mike Weir won. I think it was 03. The little left-handed guy from Canada, Mike Weir. The year he won, I was at the Masters. And we followed Tiger for a little while. We followed Mickelson for a little while. And after a while, I was like, this is okay, I guess. But believe me, when you're a fan, when you're a patron, you don't have any say-so in anything. You can't run. You can only walk. If you get busted for running, you're gone. It's just a place that time forgot. And the people who run this and the people who do this, they swear by it. Me, I think it's a big overhyped piece of you-know-what. But I can't say anything bad about the state of Georgia because I still consider that kinda home. But my biggest question on the Masters, Dustin Johnson, number one player in the world, the favorite out in Las Vegas going into this tournament, mysteriously, the day before the tournament, allegedly fell down the stairs and had to withdraw. Oh, and by the way, if he had withdrawn the day before, then another golfer, like one of those alternates, could have jumped in and possibly won the tournament. Kind of the way John Daly won his first major back in 1991. He was like the eighth alternate to the PGA Championship. And enough people dropped out where he got to participate in the tournament and he won the thing. Oh, but we can't give somebody else an opportunity. No way. But my thing is this. If you're the favorite out in Las Vegas and then you have this freak accident where nobody really saw it, did they? Did anybody see it? And then, after withdrawing, he tells ESPN's Tom Rinaldi, you know, I'll be all right in a couple days. Huh, that didn't raise any red flags? Nobody questioned that at all? Oh, and here's another controversy that went along with that. By being the favorite out in Las Vegas, obviously, there was a lot of money put on the favorite. So when Dustin Johnson withdrew, there were some sports books that refunded those tickets, but there were also some that did not refund those tickets, saying to their fans, to their customers, hey, you bet on him to win the tournament. He didn't win the tournament. Sorry, you lose. There is something really fishy about this Dustin Johnson injury that kind of got swept under the rug that I'm wondering out loud. What really happened here? You honestly believe that this entire story is on the up and up? Uh-huh. Oh, by the way, who is Dustin Johnson's wife and mother of his children? Paulina Gretzky, son of Wayne Gretzky and Janet Jones, who, when they were owners of the Phoenix Coyotes, got involved with people who were involved in gambling rings. Huh, you don't say. Where there's smoke, there's a fire. There's enough evidence here. I see some smoke. But Sergio Garcia, the ultimate choker and golfer of all time, just about, one of the biggest longtime chokers of all time. There have been bigger chokers on a smaller stage, i.e. John Vandeveld, in the British Open way back when, but that was just one tournament. This guy's been choking for years and years. There were two people that congratulated Sergio on Twitter that I found very ironic. Tiger Woods, you remember him, right? Used to win this tournament all the time? Yeah. Tiger Woods went out on Twitter and says, congratulations. Well played. Well done. Well deserved. Yeah, right. Tiger hates Sergio and vice versa. Don't sit there and tell me that Tiger meant that. It's all the publicity game. And you can go look up the issues that Sergio and Tiger have had over the years. Basically, Sergio calling out Tiger for being fake. That's a big deal right there. Oh, and by the way, our old pal Emmett Smith. You remember him. Florida Gator, Dallas Cowboys, all-time leading rusher. As soon as he retired, was all over television until they figured out he was horrible on television. Even worse than Ray Lewis. He went out on Twitter and says, congratulations to Sergio. Way to persevere through a varsity. Now, I think, and most people can figure out, he probably meant persevere through adversity. But knowing Emmett and knowing his history of horrible speech on the air, of course, people took that literally. way to persevere through a varsity. Only Emmett could get away with that. But then again, he didn't get away with it. Way to go, Emmett. So to bottom line it, Sergio finally doesn't choke and is your Masters champion. Although a video proves that he's not your Masters champion. And Dustin Johnson has a very mysterious ailment right before the tournament starts, ruining a whole lot of tickets out in Las Vegas. No controversy here.
Stay tuned for all the excitement of the world champion Cincinnati Reds. Reds Radio is produced solely by the broadcast department of the Cincinnati Reds Incorporated.
Break up the Reds, ladies and gentlemen. 4-2 after winning 2 out of 3 in St. Louis, and yesterday, an 8-0 win. Scott Feldman, who after the first inning of the opening day, I literally thought would never get another out, gave up 3 runs in that first inning and since then has not given up any runs. ERA now 2.53 after giving up 0 runs yesterday. Combine that with hotshot rookie Amir Garrett, who looked like $1 million on Friday night. Maybe, just maybe, you might have a rotation here. Now, I don't expect Feldman to keep this up, but Amir Garrett definitely has potential going forward. Joey Votto, Adam Duvall, both with home runs yesterday. Joey Votto looking to continue his streak of meaningless home runs, homering in the 9th of an 8-0 game. Both these guys on a 53 home run pace, of course. And the Reds, miraculously, after having the worst pitching staff statistically in the history of Major League Baseball last year, now they had 3 shutouts in their first 6 games. Incredible. A game that was not a shutout over the weekend was Saturday when Bronson Arroyo, pitching his first game in 1,028 days, probably shouldn't pitch another game for another 1,028 years. His ERA right now, 13.5, and let's just be honest, he didn't look that good. Bronson Arroyo, if he's on this team by the end of May, I will be shocked. But the Reds need to be congratulated on a great first week. Then again, the last 2 years, they've had good records after the first week too, and we know how those years have ended up. But they made Carlos Martinez look like a bum yesterday after Martinez looked like a Cy Young candidate against the Cubs in his first game. Lather, rinse, repeat. Who's been the hottest hitter for the Reds so far this year? In the early going? You guessed it, Zach Cozart. And you might remember last year, he started out red hot. You might remember 2 years ago, he started out red hot. Last year, in the middle of May, Zach Cozart was leading the league in hitting. You know what he ended up? 252. You know what his career average is? 248. Eventually, he is what he is. So last year, we're on this show, when we were saying, don't buy Zach Cozart. Don't buy into Zach Cozart. When he was hitting 385 at the end of May, we were begging you. The regression is going to be hard and it's going to be mean. And yes, he got back to 250. Right now, Zach Cozart's average? 450. If you think this is the year he's going to hit 275, you've lost your mind. Because data and history tells us, ain't no way that's ever going to happen. So enjoy it while you can, Zach Cozart fans and fantasy baseball players. I said this last year, I'll say this now. If you've got him, it's okay to keep him through April. Heck, it's okay to keep him through May. But by June 1st, dump him. Hey, even the Reds' bullpen is good this year. Drew Storen, Blake Wood. Where did these guys come from? All in all, a very impressive first week for the Reds. However, the Reds travel to Pittsburgh tonight. Reds 4-2, Pirates 3-2. Brandon Finnegan, who threw 8 shutout innings in his first game, which was a win over the Phillies last week, will be facing Tyler Glasnow, who hasn't pitched at all this year, but last year had a 4.24 ERA in 23 innings. Never bet against a team on a streak, and the Pirates are on a streak coming off a 3-game sweep against the Braves, but there's a lot of value in the Reds tonight, although last year, in Finnegan's last start of the season, it was against these same Pirates, and in 2 innings, he gave up 5 runs. But having said that, there's value in the Reds tonight because the Pirates are about a minus 140 at the time of this taping, which means you're going to get plus 130 on the Reds. Not a bad little value for two teams that look very similar so far this year. We'll stay away from this game out in the desert, but we have a game at the end of the show that will send shockwaves through the desert. So stay tuned.
We don't know where Hayes played last year, but I'm sure he did a hell of a job.
He looked real sharp. It's hard to steal second base with your shoe untied.
Quick move to first. He got him. Hayes is picked off.
Other baseball. MLB came up with each franchise's most iconic moment. And for the Reds, it was the 1975 World Series when Joe Morgan had a single to knock in the go-ahead run in Game 7 of the World Series against the Boston Red Sox. And if you go watch the video of this, Kurt Gowdy, who's no longer with us, announced this game and was obviously a Boston fan because when he was announcing the game, he sounded literally pissed off that the Reds had just taken the lead to win the game. But I have to disagree with Major League Baseball. That's the most iconic moment in Reds history? What about 41-92? Are you still punishing Pete Rose? I'm sorry, Pete Rose getting hit number 41-92 to break Ty Cobb's record. That's the most iconic moment in Reds history. Not Joe Morgan's little bleeder single up the middle. Well, granted, it did win Game 7 of the World Series, but still, what do people remember about that World Series? Certainly not that hit, I can promise you that. A guy named Carlton Fisk took care of that the previous game.
That'll bring up Hank Shaw, who led the Sox in home runs and RBIs last year. I don't know how this guy keeps his mind on baseball with all the paternity suits and all.
I think those are parking tickets.
Yeah.
More baseball. Who's the best team in the American League right now? The Minnesota Twins. They have 4 walk-off wins in the first week. Although, bottom line fantasy baseball favorite Byron Buxton, allegedly the Twins' best player, has started out the season with 2 hits in his first 26 at-bats, going from 3rd in the lineup to now 8th in the lineup. Yeah, fantasy baseball rocks. Speaking of fantasies, Tim Tebow hit another home run over the weekend. That's 2 in the first week. He's like Joey Votto and Adam Duvall on pace for over 50. Just a matter of time before he makes the big leagues. Right? Uh-huh. NBA. Okay, it's over. Russell Westbrook's your MVP. He's averaging a triple-double. He's got 42 of them on the year. Both NBA records. Just give him the MVP. Although, James Harden came out today and said, well, I think wins are more important when you're looking at the MVP voting. Well, yeah, that's just a desperate attempt to get more votes in your favor, but I'm sorry. With these numbers, Westbrook is the MVP. He doesn't play on a good team. He doesn't play on a team with very good players other than him. His team's going to be a first-round knockout in the NBA playoffs, no matter who they play at this point. But he's the MVP. You can't put up those kind of numbers and be ignored. Although, the year Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double, he wasn't the MVP. And heck, when Ted Williams, the last man to hit 400 in Major League Baseball, when he hit 406 in 1941, he wasn't even the MVP. It was Joe DiMaggio. So these great statistical seasons sometimes get punished, not rewarded, by these MVP voters. But I digress.
He's heating up. He's on fire.
Speaking of the NBA playoffs, the Cleveland Cavaliers were ahead by 26 points going into the fourth quarter yesterday in Atlanta, and they lost. The last 840 times an NBA team had gone to the fourth quarter leading by 26 points, that team won. Make that 840 and won now. I've been saying this for weeks now. Cleveland cannot just flip on the light switch when the playoffs start and expect to be some great bastion of NBA awesomeness. They certainly can't play defense, and since January 1st, this is a 500 team. Good luck in the playoffs. You might get through 1 or 2 rounds easy, but once you get to those conference finals, and even if you're lucky enough to make the NBA finals, it ain't gonna be easy, LeBron. I'm sorry. Because A, your guys don't play much defense, and B, you just don't seem to have it this year. So good luck.
Boom shakalaka.
LaVar Ball still at it. Apparently he's an AAU coach. Wow, that's a shocker. And he benched his son, LaMelo, in an AAU game. Wow, that's shocking. This a few days after he made a almost racial reference to Steve Alford, the coach at UCLA. By the way, if I'm Alford, if Indiana had offered him that job, he should have walked to Indiana. If not for anything else other than the fact that he's got to deal with LaVar Ball for 2 more kids to go to UCLA. Sheesh. Do you honestly think that LaVar Ball is affecting his son's draft status in the NBA draft in a few weeks? No, I don't either. But he can sure affect a lot of college programs like UCLA and drive his boy crazy, Steve Alford.
For all of you that thought we were through, you were wrong.
Other news. Ric Flair was at a bar in Fort Wayne, Indiana and got kicked out over the weekend. Why does that not shock me? And according to reports, he got kicked out for acting like Ric Flair. Really? You can't go into a bar and act like every woman in the bar wants to sleep with you? Like Space Mountain? Like telling every woman they can ride Space Mountain? You can't do that in the real world in this day and age? I'm shocked. Keep living the gimmick, Ric Flair. You're still the man to me. Number one, along with 1A, Macho Man Randy Savage is my all-time favorite wrestler. By the way, right behind those two, anybody who beat Hulk Hogan. My 3 all-time favorite wrestlers, right there. Flair, Macho Man, and anybody who beat Hogan.
Whoa, wait a minute.
You're my friend. Don't walk on me. I'm not through gloating.
Some NFL players are in trouble because they were arm wrestling in Las Vegas over the weekend, apparently violating some kind of gambling on something contest. Who knows? Really? They're arm wrestling. They're not playing football. Oh, by the way, now you can now wager on the NFL draft out in Las Vegas. Like who's going to be the number one pick and who's going to get picked where and what have you. You don't think this opens up a can of worms? If I'm a member of any little NFL scouting team, I am on the horn to Las Vegas every time a player is about to be picked and I get this money down. I think Vegas might regret the day they do this one because there might be some insider trading violations. Because believe me, these gamblers and insider trading, look at Billy Walters. He was just found guilty of insider trading after the chairman of Dean Foods testified against him. Now here's Billy Walters, considered the greatest sports gambler ever. He's 70 years old now, and he's realistically facing anywhere from an 8 to 10 year sentence and is going to be fined about $40 million. This guy's 70 years old. He's done it all out in Las Vegas. And this is what he gets for all his hard work? Wow. I know Martha Stewart was kind of the poster child for insider trading punishment, but she didn't get 8 to 10 years. I can promise you that. But why is everybody coming down on gambling so hard? It's legal in Las Vegas. It's legal in Nevada. We now have a professional football team in Las Vegas, Nevada. Norman Chad, the longtime writer for the Washington Post. Now you probably know him as the goofball who announces the World Series of Poker. He brought up a good point over the weekend. Why doesn't the NFL just embrace gambling like it should? They're the biggest sport in the world because of gambling. And what they could probably do, the NFL can make their own sports book. They can open their own book and have control over everything. That would bring in gazillions of dollars. There's money to be made on gambling on football games. And the NFL is just letting it go by, trying to be holier than thou. Because in 5 to 10 years, it's going to be legal everywhere anyway. Why not control it now yourselves? Dumb.
Smoke weed every day.
Speaking of dumb, one NFL player that won't be worried about the coming football season in terms of playing will be Tony Romo because he's going to be an announcer. And that's all fine and dandy. But here's my question. What about poor Phil Simms and how he was treated by CBS? You don't think Jim Nantz had something to do with this? You don't think Jim Nantz hates Phil Simms? You don't think there's any irony to the fact that this was all announced the week that Jim Nantz is on the road doing the Final Four and then on the road during the Masters and he doesn't have to answer to all this? Huh. Another conspiracy revealed by the bottom line. I can't believe it. And of course, all the naysayers are coming out, including Bonnie Bernstein, who worked with the number one CBS crew forever for a decade, saying that it's not fair that Romo doesn't have a chance to succeed. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I've never heard Tony Romo talk for more than 5 minutes just on silliness. So we'll find out. But if I'm Phil Simms, and Chris Simms came out on Twitter yesterday and reiterated this, if I'm Phil Simms, yeah, I'm a little bitter. And I'm getting my money up front for the rest of my contract from CBS right now. Pretty crappy how they treated him. Then again, was he the best announcer in the world? He's been at this for 20 years now. It's not like he's going to improve. But then again, as a society, we're always killing announcers. Name all the football announcers you truly like right now. Yeah, it's hard. I've got Al Michaels, and that's it.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
Cash, cold, that's what I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, Smooth Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver! Yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, it's Mac Daddy Stogie time. For those of you who did not listen to us last year during baseball season, what we try to do is we try to find an underdog that's going to win a baseball game for that evening. And you say, oh, well, underdogs don't win in baseball. Well, even the worst teams in baseball win 60, 65 games a year. So don't sit there and tell me that the worst teams don't win. And tonight, we're taking one of the biggest underdogs on the board. We're going to Coors Field, one of our all-time favorites. Colorado 5-2 on fire, minus 175 over the poor little San Diego Padres at plus 165 tonight. Tyler Chatwood for the Rockies, 6.0 ERA. Emergency starter Jared Cozart for the Padres, 27 ERA in one inning pitch this year. And of course, all baseball fans know that one of the biggest home field advantages in baseball is that of Coors Field, because it is a hitter's haven. If you played fantasy baseball this year, look at the first three or four rounds in your draft. Trevor Story, shortstop. Charlie Blackman, outfielder. Nolan Arenado, third baseman. All guys who were taken very early in your draft. Why? Because they play half their games at Coors Field, and their numbers look great because of it. Now, this isn't the pre-Humidor Colorado Rockies, where Larry Walker and Todd Helton were basically Hall of Famers lying in wait until they watered down the baseballs. Oh, by the way, the manager of the Rockies, Bud Black. Where did he used to manage? San Diego, tonight's opponent. So, you don't think these Padres are going to be a little fired up for tonight? Padres have a lot of good young players. Manuel Margot, Hunter Renfroe, both awesome young player outfielders. You're in a fantasy league, watch both these guys if they're on your waiver wire, because they will produce big for you for no price right now. But the one thing that puts me in the favor of San Diego tonight, Austin Hedges, the Padres catcher, is not playing today. He's being benched, aka coach's decision. Kind of like DNP coach's decision in the NBA. He's being benched tonight because he's caught the last three games. He's played in every game this season, and his current batting average, .000. He's 0 for 18 on the year. So that can only help the Padres. Austin Hedges being on the bench. We'll take the Padres tonight, getting a huge number. If you put $1 on this on the Padres tonight and they win, you get back your dollar plus $1.65. That's pretty good return on your investment. Padres go into Colorado and pull off the upset. Your Mac Daddy Stogie of the night, thanks to Austin Hedges, 0 for 18, sitting on the bench. And you can take that to the desert and smoke it.
I'd be the worst courtside reporter. So, Dwight Howard, how do you feel like your 12 missed free throws affect the people that bet the over?
And that does it for the Monday, April 10th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.